You're the one that said the Russian Revolution was the biggest thing this century.
Yes, I did.
Are you saying you're a Bolshevik right to our face?
If you are asking me if I am for armed revolution, sir, I am not.
I'm for living wages and changing stages and fundamental improvements for all the working class, every working lass, every head in soft hat. There is nothing radical, no, nothing radical, nothing radical about that.
I'm not listening to this.
The Citizens Committee of 1000, do you think they honestly believed that it was a Bolshevik revolution, or did they just use that to get the sympathies of the general population?
I think they actually exploited this fear, this paranoia. And the reason I believe that is if you read the newspapers, if you read the anti-strike newspapers, especially the Citizens Committee, there are just many references to Bolshevism. There are many references to taking over the city, to doing a Soviet-style government. If you say something often enough and plant the seed, some people will actually believe that. The vast majority of Canada's daily newspapers took up the same response, especially in their editorial coverage, and said, you know, what's happening in Winnipeg is really not a labor issue. It's more than that.
So the papers, locally and internationally, would you say for the most part, they were actually critical of the strike?
Yes, very critical. Their response was that it was time, in many cases, it was time for the government to intervene and to end this strike and to settle this quickly. With the exception, I might add, of the Toronto Star, which was essentially sympathetic to the strike and said, no, we have to see this more as a labor issue than as a revolution.
You know, news is supposed to be fair, impartial, fact-based. At least that's the ideal, I think, that they aspire towards. Do you think that in a lot of cases the coverage of the strike fell short of that standard?
Well, there's a difference between news and the truth. News signals an event, and the truth are the facts and causes underlying the event. So it's one thing to print the news, but it's another thing to have the facts correct. And I think where certainly the anti-strike newspapers fell short was in telling the truth of the story. I mean, they were reporting events that were taking place, but then the editorial coverage was slanted and I think was certainly not factual. In terms of the reportorial coverage, the coverage by the reporters, I think what is fair to say is that the events were reported, but you can also have a slant in the actual dispatches. For example, if you have a story about how returned soldiers were aggressive towards foreigners because they felt that they were against the strike, And so in a sense, in the coverage itself, the reporting can leave you with the impression that foreigners are behind the strike, that foreigners are the problem behind the strike, which wasn't the case. But the story lingers in the reader's mind that, oh, this might be the case.
So you think it's more like the choices they made in terms of the subjects they chose to focus on, the language they might have used,
yes,
the kind of pictures,
yes,
they painted, all of, yeah, that sort of added up?
The headlines. Imagine blaring headlines indicating that the violence will be erupting soon. And usually editorials are placed inside the paper. But during the strike, several of the papers on occasion would print editorials on the front page. And it's very unusual to do that. And of course, if you're a reader, boy, that draws your attention because that doesn't necessarily happen with every event.
So this event got a lot of front page coverage?
Oh, it was front page coverage in Winnipeg. There was almost a daily editorial and sometimes two commenting on the strike.
What would you say would be like a current day analog? Like, is there a news event that has had that much coverage?
Well, if you look at 9/11... We know that 9/11 was front page coverage for 3-4 weeks. And then eventually it drifted off into the back pages. But for the first month, and certainly for the month of September, that was the major news story. And so there were follow-up stories, there was more information, there was more, and then certainly there were a lot of opinions that were taking place. And then, of course, there was follow-up news stories about what the government was going to do, what the Bush administration was going to do. So that's an example of a hot story that stayed front page for several weeks.
Wow, so Winnipeg General Strike got the sort of 9/11 profile coverage.
it did. And you have to remember that in 1919, basically, the only media was the newspapers. It's not as if you could turn on the radio and perhaps get another interpretation or another viewpoint, or then you could turn on the television or go to your laptop and pull up the internet and read somebody's blog. They didn't exist. So you were confined to reading what the press said.
In retrospect, history has provided an answer to the question of what was the actual cause of the Winnipeg General Strike. And so what is this generally agreed upon answer?
The first complete analysis of the strike was done in 1949 by a historian by the name of Donald Masters. He came to Winnipeg in 1949 and did extensive investigation. He was looking at the causes of the strike, the results and interpretation, and one of his findings was that it wasn't a Bolshevik-led revolution, and it wasn't organized by what was known as the One Big Union. The One Big Union was an attempt during the strike to organize all workers, regardless of what their trades were, into one big union. And most historians subsequently, where they might disagree with the causes of the strike or analysis or interpretation, I think they would agree that the strike wasn't caused by Bolshevism and it wasn't directed by the One Big Union. And so if you look at the Toronto Daily Star and what it said in 1919 and its coverage, it was the most accurate in its reporting and its editorial coverage of the strike. So in retrospect, we can look back and say they got it right.
And which papers got it wrong?
Well, by if the Star got it right, then you could say that the majority of Canadian newspapers outside of Winnipeg, at least editorially, were incorrect in their assessment of the cause of the strike and who was behind it. And certainly in Winnipeg, the anti-strike newspapers, their assessment was wrong as well.
For the right to fraternize and to unionize and incremental adjustments for fairer bargaining, lesser arguing and worker spirits intact. There is nothing radical, no, nothing radical. Nothing radical about that.
You are listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. The program is People of Interest. The report you are listening to is the book launch at McNally Robinson Booksellers, author Michael Dupuis, and his book is Winnipeg's General Strike Reports from the Front Line, an interview with Sarah Aronson.
What can this teach us about journalism and history?
Well, there's a famous Washington Post publisher by the name of Philip Graham, I think it was Philip Graham, once said that journalism is the first rough draft of history. And it's not the polished product and it's not the result of professional historians, but it's a primary source of information. So if you look back on the strike, I think one of the sources would be to look at the newspaper reporting. The other thing is to also recognize that journalists are not always totally objective. For instance, if you were working for the Winnipeg Free Press during the strike as a reporter, it would be very unlikely if you went out and you reported a story and wrote it up and brought it back that was sympathetic to the workers. I think your editor would say, I don't think we're going to run this. And don't you know that this paper really is not supportive of the strike? So I think you have to understand who owns the newspapers, what's their position, because that influences the coverage. And then I think you have to realize that no reporter can be 100% accurate in their recall, whether that event happened 2 hours ago or 2 days ago. And reporters are human, depending upon the sources that they're going to use, that's important. Who are they going to talk to? So if you're a reporter and you go and talk out and during the strike and you talk to members of the Citizens Committee of 1000 and you got their side of the story, then that's a bias. Unless you went and you talked to pro-strike people, members of the strike committee, and then you had their opinion and then you combine those in your story.
Let's bring this back to your book.
Okay.
When somebody picks up a copy of your book, what can they expect to find?
Well, what they will find after the introduction is bios on each of the 20-odd journalists. And I think it's interesting to see at the back, see the background of the journalists, to look at their ages when they covered the strike. So that's part of the setting. And so to know who the players were in this case. And then the book is a narration of the strike. It's chronological. We start with when the strike actually started on the 15th of May, right up to the very end and on June 26th. And it's done in six chapters, six sections. But each of those chapters is made up primarily of the dispatches and the editorials of the journalists. So you'll have an event such as Bloody Saturday. And I will describe what happened, the facts, and then you will see what the various journalists said. And then the reader can draw their own conclusion as to perhaps what was the fair coverage, what was the truth. And then at the end of the book, I have a short epilogue that explains the outcome of the strike. What were the immediate results of the strike, and what were some of the longer-term results of the strike. What I would also add is the book has approximately 50 images, and about a third of the images are actually of the journalists themselves. So it is interesting, I thought, not only do you have the journalist's name in a bio, but you actually have a photograph of him or her in one case. And I think as a student of history and as a teacher of history, to put a face on a name is important. And then the remainder of the images are of scenes of events during the strike.
So if somebody wants to get a hold of your book, what's the best place to buy it?
There's McNally Robinson, which is in Grant Park. There is a Chapter store in the Polo Park that is carrying the book. And the Manitoba Museum is also another source where you can purchase the book. You can also buy it as an ebook. You could buy it online through Amazon. And my email address is not in the book, but if a listener wanted to contact me, ask some questions or have some feedback, it would be michaeldupuy@shaw.ca. So that would be M-I-C-H-A-E-L. D-U-P-U-I-S at shaw.ca, shaw.ca.
At the book launch, Dupuy gave the journalists the last word.
Winnipeg is gripped by the biggest strike in its history. Why? Simply because a few employers refuse to recognize the right of labor to organize. After repeated efforts to have them act in a reasonable manner, the men in the metal trades struck work to enforce their demands. The Building Trades Council was recognized by the Employers Association, and their demands were declared to be just and reasonable. But the employers said that those reasonable wages could not be found. Or in other words, the men involved must work for less than a living wage. If the workers must starve, it might as well be now rather than later. This is the reason behind the general strike. However, the Winnipeg Citizen had a different take on the same event. This is what their editor said. "It is to the general public of Winnipeg that we speak in stating without equivocation that this is not a strike at all. In the ordinary sense of the term, it is revolution. Printed with a capital R."
"I'm for shorter working days and paid for holidays and equal work, equal pay, and for safer working places."
This piece was created and voiced by Sarah Aronson, with additional recordings by David Brigoli. The music that you've been listening to is from Strike the Musical by Danny Schur. Please check out Michael Dupuy's new book, Winnipeg's General Strike, Reports from the Front Lines. There
radical, no, nothing radical, nothing radical about that.
Easy for you to talk while I did your fighting for you. Let's go, boys!